This is an ABC podcast.
Another week flies by. Another week further from our birth and closer to our death. But for this sweet little 20 minutes, we get to hold each other, learn a few things, maybe even have a chuckle. Up to you. No chuckles guaranteed. But we're going to have some fun, my friends. Welcome to another Snack Pack with me, Sammy J, who, when he was at school, not only did he speak in third person, but he also went to his careers counsellor one day and said, I want to be an epidemiologist. And they laughed at me. I said, that'll never be a cool job, Sammy J. You should go into the far more respected profession of musical comedian. So I went about my days, but oh boy, have I suffered some career regret these last couple of years. Epidemiologists are the new rock stars, and none come rockier than Professor Catherine Bennett, who will join us later in the pod to take us through what she's been seeing, hearing, and tasting. And what's in a name? Dan Diamond, that is a strong name. He's got an amazing name, and he's got an amazing job over with the Washington Post as a national health reporter in the States. Not just that, though, he's also got an amazing story to tell us about how they're trying to protect the sunshine in America. That's right, daylight savings time. Permanent. Could you handle it? We'll find out. I hope you read the ingredients properly, though, before you started this episode, because I like to have truth in advertising. You know, the label is important, but sadly, scams do exist. Don't know if you know this, you can be wine scammed too. That's right, we're coming into a bit of a festive Easter season. If you're having a little drink of your favourite wine, how do you know it's the real deal? Well, why don't we ask Maureen Downey, the godmother of the wine authentication business, winefraud.com. Maureen, how do you get a job as a wine detective?
You know, it's actually something I kind of created, which is why I think they call me the godmother.
So how far back are we going?
I started in wine auctions in 2000, and it was kind of one of those, it's not something I set out to do, but when you put a bunch of wines up in front of you and you see, you know, one of them is different than the others, and they're all supposed to be the same thing, you start going, something's fishy here. So that's how it started. And here I am 20 years later, 22 years later, and I'm a godmother.
Well, congratulations, Maureen. Look, I was being somewhat flippant there, but it is actually the case that wine fraud is a real issue in the industry. What is the problem?
We used to say about 20%. The World Health Organization claims that 25% of all alcohol is counterfeit. The problem is that it's big money. You know, a lot of people, rather than using their skill sets to make legitimate products, would be happy to make a ton of money making illicit products. And what they've found is that making counterfeit wine is highly lucrative. And if they get caught, they maybe get a slap on the wrist. So organized crime has gotten into the game, and it's become a global blight,
so,
really.
So, Maureen, to be clear here, are we talking about wine that is being sold, like, you know, someone impersonating another label with cheap wine, or is it just wine that is actually potentially dangerous and doesn't even constitute wine in terms of the ingredients?
All of them. In China, there's a lot of wine that actually contains no grape product. But, you know, the brand Yellowtail, famous Australian. Mm-hmm. The UK is awash with counterfeit Yellowtail right now because Chinese and European organized crime just pumped it into the system. So it really has permeated every type. It's not like you only get expensive counterfeit wine. It comes in on the low end. It comes in the middle end. It's everywhere.
Now, I have romantic visions, Maureen, of you just strolling into bottle shops and restaurants all around the world in a sort of James Bond-style manner and just swigging from their bottles and deciding straight away whether it's real or not. I imagine the reality of what you do is not quite as glamorous.
You know, we don't actually taste the wine. You cannot taste for authenticity.
Oh,
if you could taste for authenticity, then there would be no fraud. So we have to do everything forensically. So it is a little bit more James Bond, and I get a lot of funny looks. But, you know, I'll often stroll into a wine shop or a restaurant with a wine cellar that's accessible, and I, you know, pull out a little blue light, and I start looking at bottles, and people are very afraid of what I'm doing.
And have you had those moments, those eureka moments, where you've cracked it and realized that you have discovered someone's doing the wrong thing?
Absolutely.
And what's the next step after that? Does it go straight to the courts? Like, you don't want to be taking on international crime rings, Maureen.
No. So typically what happens is, you know, a client will call us. I've been training people all over the world. We had one guy in Australia, but he unfortunately washed out of the program. He didn't make it. So I'm still looking for another person down there.
Okay.
But so what we do is we get contacted by clients, and we come in and we look at their wine, preferably before they buy, but typically after they buy. And, you know, we inspect everything. It's rather a process. We look at about 110 different data points on any given bottle. We take photographs. We use microscopes. We use all sorts of lighting. And then we make reports about the counterfeit wines. Most vendors will give our clients, you know, they'll make them whole. They'll give them a refund and pay back our fees. Or, you know, swap out with authentic bottles.
This is the Sammy J Snack Pack.
Look, when I first heard the name Dan Diamond, I didn't think it was real. I thought it was a fictional character from a comic book. Then I discovered he is real. And he works for the Washington Post, and I thought the Washington Post isn't real. It's a fictional newspaper from a comic book. Then I discovered that is real. And then I heard that he was writing in the Washington Post as a health reporter about how they're trying to make daylight savings time permanent with a bill called the Sunshine Protection Act. And I thought, that's not real. That's a made-up piece of legislation from a comic book. Well, no, turns out that's real as well. And the person to tell us more about it is the fabulously named Dan Diamond. G'day, Dan.
Good morning, Sammy J. I'm happy to be here, and I love my name.
You should. It's a brilliant name. Is it short for Daniel?
It is short for Daniel.
Please tell me your middle name also starts with D.
No, it does not. But that would almost be too many D's. It would be too many consonants.
Too much. Now, there is potentially too much darkness right now in the world and in the United States, because I want to talk to you about a particular bill that has just passed the Senate in America this week called, what's the name of it? Because it's very classy, the Sunshine Protection Act. What's going on, Dan? Why does the sunshine need protecting?
The argument in the United States, or at least in some of the dark corners of the United States, is that we need more sunshine. And the daylight saving time that kicks in the winter, where we fall back for a number of months, there are some lawmakers who don't want to do that anymore and say that it would be better for business, it would be better for our health, our mental health, to have the sunlight, as much of it as we can, later in the day, year-round. Not everyone agrees, but the Senate did move unanimously on a bill that would accomplish that.
What's the next step for the bill now? Does it, because we have a slightly similar situation here, does it go back to the House now, or what are the chances of it actually becoming law?
That's a great question. It's not clear to me how soon this would become law, because the other chamber here in the States, the House, is not ready to pick up this version of the bill. There are lawmakers who have argued for it in the House, but the leaders of the House have no immediate plans to move on this. And it does seem the farther we get away from the clock change, which only happened a few days ago here in the States, kind of lose momentum for any big policy shift. The White House also doesn't seem to know what it wants to do on this either. So it's the sort of thing that it may just end up sputtering out because other policy priorities seize everyone's attention.
What's the argument in favour of it, Dan? Here in Australia, we're heading towards our winter right now, so soon we will be changing our clocks to desperately claw back an extra bit of light in our day. What's the argument towards making that permanent throughout the year?
I think there are two, Sammy J. The first is the clock change annoys everyone here in the States, or at least annoys most of us. Yeah. According to polls, two-thirds of Americans don't want to do it. I'm sure some similar number of Australians don't like changing the clocks too. But then the question is, what's better, permanent daylight time or permanent standard time? The permanent daylight time advocates say that allows us to have more light in the afternoons and the evenings. There's more shopping. People are going out more to eat. There's a retail effect. And then there's also the health effect of people being able to play sports later in the day in the sun. The argument for the standard time, just sticking with that, is if we were to move to more daylight time in the afternoon, that means we're losing it in the morning. And there could be kids going to school in the dark. There could be people waking up for their jobs, their essential jobs as service workers, and commuting in the dark. And there could be more car accidents and other public health issues of just living more of our mornings in the dark.
And of course, not all states and towns are created equal, because depending on geographically where you are, I understand what in Idaho it might be dark until, 9 o'clock in the morning?
There are some very bleak projections of 9 a.m. darkness in Idaho, in Detroit, different parts of America. So, yes, the states that wouldn't have quite as much darkness may be more in favor than the states that would see, because they're on the kind of time zone line, see the darkness really hitting later in the day.
I'm chatting to Dan Diamond in Washington all about the Sunshine Protection Act that it's made its way halfway through the turgid American democratic system, as these bills tend to do. Gee, it sort of blows open the whole idea of time, doesn't it, Dan? Because it really is a human construct, and we can fiddle with it as much as we want, which is a horrifying realization.
I watched a congressional hearing on this about a week ago, Sammy J. I, at the time, didn't realize the Senate was going to vote in a few days. To be honest, most lawmakers didn't know. This was somewhat of a surprise. But there was a House member, Jan Schakowsky, here in the States, who said she was amazed to learn when she first got to Washington that Congress had power over time. So yeah, it's just amazing to think about that humans set up these systems, and yet the sun marches on.
It does indeed, as must our show. But what a pleasure to chat to you, Dan Diamond. Now that I've got your number, I might just bug you again when something comes up Washington-based.
It would be a ray of sunlight in my phone.
The Snack Pack.
Okay, it's time for a very special guest now. If you live in Australia, I know not all of you do, but those who do, you will probably be familiar with the voice and face of Catherine Bennett, Professor Catherine Bennett, Chair in Epidemiology at the Deakin University, who's been guiding us through this pandemic since the earliest days of 2020. So important is this chat that I don't want to do it in a normal studio booth. I want to get out in the real world. We're going to go into a special echo chamber where there are crickets. And Catherine Bennett, welcome to the special echo cricket-filled chamber as I ask you what you've been seeing, hearing and tasting. But first, I believe you have a party trick to share with us.
It's actually saying the alphabet backwards.
Okay.
And it kind of rhymes.
Can you say the Greek alphabet backwards? Because that might be quite cathartic during the pandemic.
And it's shorter.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know. Okay. All right, I'm ready.
Hang
on.
Go.
I've just got to...
Yep.
It's early, but I'll go. ZYXWVQTXRQPOMNLKJIFGFEDCBA.
Hey, Catherine Bennett, Chair in Epidemiology, rocking the alphabet backwards. Ah, Catherine, how are you feeling right at the moment? 2022 going okay for you?
It is. I just think we're in a different place.
Yep.
And it's still confusing. It's still uncertain. But at the same time, we've got students back on campus. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so exciting. And just hearing from the staff who just that sense of we've held it together. Deakin's fantastic, I think, for online education. Our students have been fantastic, you know, making that journey through.
Yep.
But actually having feet on campus, faces on campus is really... Yeah,
absolutely.
Something else.
It's something to cherish for however long it lasts or whatever stage we find ourselves in. But right now, Catherine Bennett, I have three hardcore questions for you. Are you ready to answer them?
I am.
Catherine Bennett, renowned epidemiologist, friend of the Breakfast Program, what you seeing?
Well, it's interesting. As I've moved away just recently from doing 100-hour weeks, mm-hmm. literally, 7 days, no television, having to ease myself back into television, and my partner came up with a brilliant idea of us watching the entire Hornblower series on our weekend evening. So, in fact, I've gone back. You know, we're starting last century and we're going to work our way back into
now,
current television.
For those like me who only are vaguely aware of Hornblower, what's the premise and how when was this show made?
So it was made, I think, in the 90s. Mm-hmm. So it was the story of a British fictional captain, but during the Napoleonic Wars. And so it's kind of a bit of a light-hearted war movie. My partner actually watches a lot of historic movies and war movies, so this was kind of at the lighter entertainment end of it. But it was a big series here in the 90s. So anyway, I'm now catching back
and,
up.
And how much longer have you got to go?
Oh, we finished.
Oh, you're done? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, it was like 8 movie-length episodes, but that was the kind of last 2 months. Every weekend we sit down in the evening and watch a Hornblower.
Hornblower, okay, that's a strong first answer. But, Catherine Bennett, you're not going to get away with it that easily for the second question. What's your hearing?
Hearing, that's interesting. The thing that's changed the last couple of months for me in hearing is magpies. I've always loved the warble of a magpie. To me, that was a child that was associated with holidays or visiting my aunt when she was at one time renting a farm. And so it was something that was very soothing and magical and different and exotic in a way. But we've had some magpies move into my partner's beach shack where we escape when we don't have a ring of steel. Oops, I mentioned COVID. But just lovely. There was a family with some teenage magpies, and they arrive and they have their own spots on particular branches. And the same's happened at my home. And so we've actually just had a bit of an influx of beautiful song from magpies. And so it brings my sense of calm and zen and holiday back, even if, you know, haven't quite made the holiday time yet.
That is absolutely beautiful. And sure beats, you know, a crime podcast as far as something to relax to. Catherine Bennett, it's time for the big final question. And this one, you're not going to be calm. You're not going to get away with this. What you tasting, Catherine Bennett?
It's passion fruit.
Ooh.
It's passion fruit season. And I have a vine that produces prolifically just for about, it feels like 2 weeks. And so I get to drive over passion fruit because unfortunately it's right beside my driveway.
Okay. Oh.
And by the time you come home and realise you've dropped some passion fruit today, you can discover some of the best fruit in a very, sorry, it's a bit violent for this time.
That's all right. Week, but, no, we can take it. We can handle it.
That kind of crushed, burst passion fruit. But at the same time, I have a big bowl of passion fruit. And when it first flowered, I had a fruit that season and I cut it open with great ceremony. And it had one little seed and bit of pulp inside. And I just felt so cheated to have an empty passion fruit. But now, of course, it's grown into itself. And I love passion fruit. So it's summer and it's homegrown and it's a powerful taste.
Well, we have, from Catherine Bennett, hornblower, magpies and passion fruit. And Catherine, can I say quite sincerely, when we talk all about this idea of normalising this world we're in and some sort of coming out into some future that is better than the past few years, I couldn't think of a more symbolic way to do that than to chat to you about normal things in life. And may we be able to do that more often in the months and years ahead.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
This is the Sammy J Snack Pack.
And here we have it. Are we all done? Are we all sold? And sold, another snack pack in the bag. Hope you have a great week ahead. Thank you, as always, to my sound wizard, Ross Kavanagh, for pushing the buttons and stitching together the stories that were sourced by my beautiful breakfast radio family on ABC Melbourne. You can tune into my breakfast show wherever you are via the ABC Listen app. Don't forget to rate the podcast, share it with your friends if you'd like to. Go about your week in peace, and I'll see you back here next week for some more tasty little nuggets.